William Sanderson Mayer is a favorite of the BizNews community. We know that over 100,000 people watching our last conversation. And it's not surprising. He is the author of Jaundiced Eye. Jaundiced Eye is the longest running column on politics in South Africa. More than three decades, William has been producing it. So if anybody knows the context of what's happening, he's the man. It's published on Politics Web, and his most recent one, well, it quite a few chords for me, and I'm sure will for you too. Good to be with you again, William. It seems like the ANC has got everything going its own way at the moment. I had a fascinating conversation yesterday. I think it's the first time that they've kind of spoken out. The husband of Philippa Erasmus, the headmistress of Pretoria High School for Girls, and the chairman of the governing body at Pretoria High School for Girls, and the behavior of the ANC education department against them is really appalling. And then before that, we had the firing of Andrew Whitfield, and then the engineering of Emma Powell to step down for just telling the truth. And then on the other hand, Ramaphosa tells us yesterday at the NEC closing that, yeah, this government of national unity is working real well. We are making advances on the national democratic revolution, basically doubling down on insanity. So you're the man who knows all of this stuff. I'm sitting on the outside and, like many others, terribly confused at why the Democratic Alliance is facilitating, it appears, the ANC, which now only has 40% of the vote, no longer over 50, to do what the heck it wants.
Well, I wish I could claim that I did know, but it's interesting to look at it always from the outside. As you say, the ANC is in an extraordinary position. 40% of the vote, the DA actually has slightly more than half of the ANC's vote and has been relegated completely to the role of junior partnership in the alliance, in the coalition, because it's essentially at this stage a coalition between the two major parties. And the intention of that coalition was twofold. It was to keep out the hard left and in the form of the EFF and the MK, and secondly primarily to ensure that South Africa's economic problems were addressed. It's failed, I think, in both senses. It kept the EFF out and it's kept the MK out. But the hard left has triumphed completely within that alliance. So what one has is a democratic alliance, which is essentially propping up a government which is hard left. You will have seen that during the course of this week as well, when Ramaphosa was speaking at the SACC conference, he was quite blunt about it. You know, the GNU is giving us a path to ensuring that the National Democratic Revolution is implemented. And he's said that more than once. I can understand that the ANC is incredibly happy with the GNU, because the GNU are the wheels to its fortune. And the Democratic Alliance has gone along with it. You ask why? Well, it's power. It's DA needs the GNU, I think, for two reasons. There's a lot of support in the public for a government of national unity, in the hopes that it would provide that kind of pragmatism that would take South Africa out of the mess that it's in. And the DA just wants this alliance to continue, this unity government to continue till closer to next year's municipal elections. If it falls apart, then it believes that its exposure and the role that it's played in the GNU will suffice to bring it lots of votes. That remains to be seen. It's a gamble.
Yeah, it does. It does appear like a heck of a gamble, because the biggest beneficiary so far is the DA's, deadly rival, certainly in the Western Cape, where it has got an opportunity to show its template, and that's Gayton McKenzie. He's just growing and growing, and through the coverage and the efforts that he's made in the GNU. And it appears as though the DA, certainly a lot of commentators and a lot of people in business are telling me this, it's like they've been recruited by the ANC and that those government ministers now are not standing up in the way that one would have expected an opposition party, or indeed a party with the principles that the Democratic Alliance purports to have.
I think Gayton McKenzie is flattered. His party has benefited almost unreasonably from his participation, in the sense that I don't think he is a powerful force within the GNU to actually make things better. What he is he's an incredibly good showman, and I think there's a public response to it. The DA has a difficulty. It's within the GNU, and because it's within the GNU, it is per se going along with really damaging government policies. But at the same time, it's the other half of it is standing outside of the GNU and trying to be to retain the traditional role that the DA had as a powerful, transparent, outspoken opposition, principled liberal opposition to government authoritarianism. What has happened with the Emma Powell case and other cases in which it's been silent is cooperation or sellout, however you wish to describe it, within the GNU is really damaging its old tradition. And what South Africa needs increasingly is a strong, principled liberal opposition which is unafraid of government. I don't know if you can have both. I think even with the DA, there's a realization you can't have both. But what they're hoping is they can have both for long enough that they can benefit, that they can ride some kind of political wave. But as you say, the PA is actually riding that wave for them in the Western Cape.
William, tell us about Emma Powell. She is outspoken. She's bright. She's the kind of person I would like to see representing me in Parliament. And here she has been sidelined with the acquiescence, presumably, of the Democratic Alliance yet again.
She could not have been sidelined without the Democratic Alliance's complicity in it. And more specifically, I think, the complicity of the cabinet caucus within the DA, the people who are sitting in the GNU. They were completely silent when she was under enormous public pressure, when there were these allegations that she had committed treason, that she when she was being intimidated, when she was being publicly abused, publicly humiliated, especially the parliamentary caucus was entirely silent. Not a word was said in support of her. And as we now know, she was absolutely right. Mkabisi Jones doesn't have a diplomatic visa. He hasn't visited the United States. He's not going to visit the United States. The United States has made clear that they don't want him as an interlocutor between Ramaphosa and President Trump. So she's paying a heavy price, and it could not. There's a huge difference, as you have seen, between the response that Steenhuisen made, the DA leader made, to the excision of Whitfield, Deputy Minister of Trade, the DA Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry, which Ramaphosa was entirely entitled to do, but Steenhuisen went ballistic about that. Compare that with his response to the forced resignation. Emma Powell resigned not because she performed poorly, not because she was incompetent at her job, but because she was excellent at her job. And yet he has not said a word in support. I hear that I don't know if that's true, but that he hasn't engaged with her at all in this entire matter.
R.W. Johnson is very critical of John Steenhuisen. He thinks that he's the problem for the DA, not the solution. I guess the way that he treated Emma Powell, from as you've just made that point of throwing her to the wolves, will not have given Steenhuisen much support when the next election for the leader comes up. Presumably that's not going to be, well, he's not in that role forever.
Oh, the DA hasn't got a lot of, doesn't have many options for the leadership. And I don't entirely share RW's disdain for Steenhuisen. Steenhuisen is in a difficult position, but he has been, to be charitable, let's put it this way. The position he is in has shown the failures in his leadership style. He has been easily co-opted into a supplicatory role towards Ramaphosa. He has acquiesced too easily. He has tried too hard to be pleasing. He has been patently eager to be part of the process. So he has, in a way, his errors are not necessarily ones of lack of courage, but perhaps just an inability to play the hardball game that he needed to get to play. Let's make a comparison with a Tony Leon or a Helen Ziller. It's difficult to see them handling the role that he has in the GNU in the same way that he did. They're just politically more astute, and I think that's what has shown up for Steenhuisen and his performance in the GNU. It has not been particularly astute. It's been very poor. But there are no obvious successors to Steenhuisen, and who will they take? They can't retread Helen Ziller as mayor in Johannesburg and then also expect her to return to the leadership. But she's not. I don't think she's suited for that role at this time of our history. The other leaders that remain in the DA are all sitting in the Cape, and they've indicated already that they're not. And why would they? Why would they give up a assured role in a functioning, the only functioning part of the country, to become part of a organization which is struggling nationally? It wouldn't be a politically comfortable move to make.
Just to return to my conversation yesterday on the Pretoria High School for Girls, I did raise the question about the DA having the ministry or controlling the ministry in education, but being notable by its silence on these continued attacks by the Gauteng Education Department on Pretoria High School for Girls. And it really is, William, I can't see any extenuating circumstances for Lesufi and his gang. There just isn't anything there that, unless we've been given completely the wrong information, but there it does appear to be just a concerted effort to get to close down or get rid of an excellent headmistress who's running an excellent school, and perhaps to get that school down to mediocrity. That's certainly what an outside observer would see. But the big question here is, again, getting back to the DA ministerial grouping that seems to have been absent, let alone its leader in this instance.
They haven't said a word. It's been a vicious, brutal campaign at Pretoria Girls High. Incredibly personal, a cruel campaign, the kind of campaign that screams out for DA intervention and for the DA to speak out. And as you say, they haven't said a word. There's no doubt that the DA is biting its tongue in order not to offend its senior partner. I would not be surprised if the departure of Powell was not in response to an ultimatum that Ramaphosa said, you know, to Steenhuisen, get rid of this troublesome, irksome woman, and that for that reason he didn't fire Powell, but it was made very clear to her that she was not going to get support. It's interesting in her statement when she left. She, if you read between the lines, she says something along the lines that I mean, there are two things that really strike me of her statement, which is a masterfully subtle and a piece of writing. She says two things about. She was being threatened and intimidated and harassed because of the exposure she has given in her job as a spokesperson in foreign affairs to repressive and brutal regimes that are closely enmeshed with the leaders of the ANC and the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, DIRCO. So that is a very sensitive issue for the ANC, because of the response of the US to South Africa's close ties with Iran and its virulently anti-Israeli stance and anti-US stance for that matter. The other thing is that she says that and I quote from it, in an environment that rewards expediency, truly principled leadership is rare and often costly. Given the complexities of our fragile government of national unity, I have achieved what I can for and in this moment. I mean, basically, she's saying, I can't remain in this situation because I can't do my job. And the leadership of my party lacks principles and is expedient. And that is seen not only in our response to foreign affairs, the GNU's response to the DA's response to what's happening in foreign affairs and to the United States in the trade negotiations, but with matters like the Pretoria Girls High Ward, it's an outrageous that it's one of those small incidents that encapsulates entirely the worst aspects of our society, and that it's gone uncalled out is outrageous.
So if you went back to those millions of people who voted for the Democratic Alliance in the last election, and you said to them, this is what's going to happen as a consequence of your vote. The ANC are going to stay in power, and actually, our leaders that you're voting for are going to acquiesce and facilitate the continuation of the National Democratic Revolution. Do you think they might have voted for somebody else?
I don't know. You know, they might have voted for Patriotic Alliance, but the Patriotic Alliance is even less likely to put up a spirited defense for liberal principles than the DA is. There are not many options, and I do think that a large proportion of the opposition voting public buys into the concept that you need to support at this moment the government of national unity to avoid a hard left control of government. The counter argument, which doesn't get much air and is not many people seem to be buying into, is that we already have a hard left government. And what we have now is a hard left government going balls to the wall to bring the National Democratic Revolution into being, and is being supported by the opposition party. So until that dawns becomes part of consciousness of the voting public, I think the DA is okay. I think the DA, I don't think there's the only alternative is vote for the Freedom Front, basically. And I don't see that happening. I think the Freedom Front has a natural kind of ceiling, which doesn't make it a big threat to the DA. The DA threat is the PA, but the Patriotic Alliance is not a liberal opposition party. Action South Africa might benefit somehow, despite its being erratic and being led by Mashaba, who really is quite idiosyncratic and eccentric in the way that he responds to things. Action SA is actually speaking out on issues that the DA used to speak out on, and that might benefit in some way.
So if we just close off with Ramaphosa's other big story from his announcement or his speech this week, which was, let's try and bring more parties into the government of national unity How do you interpret that, that decision? Is he perhaps sensing that maybe he's pushing the DA a little far and he might need to replace them at some point?
Yes, I think it the more parties he has, and we're talking about it flatters them to call them parties because they're really one man bands. They have either a leader and on its own, or else one or two MPs, and they are very much more easily manipulated. They're more pliable. They're more easily bought. They're more easily placated with a cabinet position. Having said that, I mean, the DA has shown that it is pretty easily bought as well. But so, yes, I think he would want to bring these parties in. It makes a lot of sense for him. It dissipates the power that the DA has of saying, well, we won't vote for this. Even although it always does do so, it reduces their leverage within the GNU. So certainly it makes a lot of sense for him to do it. And it also explains entirely why the DA is furious that he wants to do it. Unfortunately, the terms on which the DA originally went into the GNU doesn't preclude Ramaphosa from doing that. In fact, no such agreement would have made any difference anyway. The reality of politics is parties do whatever suits them best. And the only way to punish Ramaphosa would have been to walk out of the GNU, which is not what the DA wants to do. So there's a lot of sense. Ramaphosa has proof with the way that he has run and negotiated the whole GNU deal that he is an incredibly astute. He might be a weak, verging on cowardly leader, but he has played, he's run rings around the DA, and he continues to do so.
William Sanderson Mayer is the columnist on The Man Who Writes Jaundiced Eye for Politics Web. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.